Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
How low can it go? I think it was 21 below zero. That was just the air temperature at my house this morning. I know some of you had, you know, wind chill factors 30, 40, 50 below zero and more here earlier this morning. I hear Caracas, Venezuela is nice this time of year, though. In fact, I thought, you know what, let's go see. What is the current temperature in Caracas, Venezuela? 82 degrees, partly cloudy, and 82 degrees. So I tell you what, if you are one of these Tren de Aragua terrorists, one of these Tren de Aragua folks here in Montana, hey, I hear Caracas is very nice this time of year. Well, I'll tell you what, great to have our guest this hour here. We've got Daniel Bruner with us. Dan Bruner has the Bruner Sierra Group. He's a former FBI Hispanic gang expert. We're going to be talking about Tren de Aragua and so much more. Dan, thanks for being with us here on Montana Talks.
Good morning. Thank you very much for having me.
Well, last Friday here during our statewide show, I was in Glendive, and we had the Glendive Agri-Trade Expo, so we had a very busy show Friday, but that's why we're glad to have you on today, because it was last Thursday when the big news came out that these Tren de Aragua, this violent Venezuelan prison gang, suspects were arrested in Bozeman and Belgrade, right down the street from you practically, huh?
Absolutely. And then, and I've been talking about this for obviously a while with you and other people here in the community that, you know, Tren de Aragua TVA, as most people know it, is definitely a presence not only here in Montana, but across this country. And they've moved in the last 4 years due to the migration. And they're definitely much more than a prison gang. They're a transnational criminal organization that definitely is looking to take advantage of any opportunity here of us U.S. citizens.
Well, and I just heard, thankfully, our producer, Caden, caught it on the radio this morning during the national news update. According to Fox News, the Trump administration has now classified Tren de Aragua as a terrorist organization. So with about a minute before our first break here, how big is that going to be for going after TDA?
It expands the opportunity, the possibilities that the FBI agents and Homeland Security and all the federal agencies that are investigating these criminals, it really expands all their possibilities, expands the capabilities of them to, you know, to go after these terrorists, the different types of technologies and utilizing now National Security Agency and going after them financially. It's really a big difference. It's going to make a really big a punch at them and being able to, you know, investigate them and rip them from the inside out.
Yeah, which is obviously what has to happen. You had a great tweet on X last week after these arrests were announced. Great job by ICE. Great job by all involved, FBI, DEA, ATF, local law enforcement, etc. But there's a lot more where those came from, those TDA suspects. Okay, more to follow with Dan Bruner right after this. Plus, we're taking your phone calls if you want to jump in on the conversation.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Oh, good. I know Nancy and Roundup will have some great questions for our guest here. So we'll get into the phone calls here in just a couple of minutes. Yeah, I've gotten a chance to catch up with Dan Bruner several times. You know, last November when Homeland Security finally confirmed that, yes, Tren de Aragua has an operational presence in Montana. Luckily, we got Dan Bruner on the show right away. And then when these arrests were announced in Wolf Point, Montana, with an Aurora, Colorado connection, of course, we had Dan Bruner on the radio. And Dan, I was surprised that you came right out and said it. Because I expected, when I was talking about, you know, the home burglary story out of Belgrade and the three drug-related arrests in Wolf Point, I thought you'd give the typical kind of law enforcement response. Well, we can't confirm, but we suspect. You came out right and said it. This is Trinidad Aragua. I'm telling you, this is Trinidad Aragua. And then, boom, days later, confirmed Trinidad Aragua suspects were arrested in Bozeman.
Absolutely. And here's the thing. I've been doing this for the majority of my FBI career. I was chasing these criminals, whether it be MS-13, the Dominican Gangster Notarios, or Trinidad Aragua, TDA. I was chasing them around the country. I was internationally. I was in other countries. So, you know, bringing these guys to justice for crimes that they were conducting here in the United States. So I'm familiar with their patterns. I'm familiar with the migration, their movement. If you have three individuals in Wolf's Point with connections to Aurora, Colorado, I'd say it's likely, you know, I'm not saying, you know, I wasn't prepared to say definitively, but I'm saying most likely those guys are Trinidad Aragua, TDA. They're using, you know, they're utilizing their network, they're utilizing the communications, they're utilizing their travel patterns. And the thing that concerns me, we talked about this earlier, was not that the three members up in Wolf's Point were there by themselves. They weren't there by themselves. They had to receive, you know, a system to travel. They had to be a safety net. So they moved up there because there were other TDA members. They moved up there because they knew that they'd be safe from Aurora. But here's the thing is what they don't know, they don't realize is by moving from Aurora to Wolf's Point, they cross state lines. And if they're wanted by Colorado law enforcement, even if it's a local, even if it's just Aurora PD, they've committed a federal violation by what's called unlawful flight to avoid prosecution, UFAP. And that is a federal violation that they've fled an area knowing that they're wanted for a state crime, and that's a federal violation now. So no matter what the charges are up in Wolf's Point, if the FBI can come in and arrest them for a federal violation if there's a warrant out for them in Colorado. So there's a lot of different tools that can be utilized here at this point.
Yeah. One of those suspects, by the way, Danny Garcia, I think he was the one listed being from Aurora, Colorado. Apparently because of evidence handling laws in the state of Montana, they're not able to charge him under state charges. But they sound pretty confident. I've got a statement in front of me here from the Roosevelt County Attorney's Office. They seem pretty confident that federal charges against him will follow. And then they added this line from the Roosevelt County Attorney. The Roosevelt County Sheriff's Office, Fort Peck Tribes, Montana Highway Patrol, and local federal agents will continue to work tirelessly to protect all the citizens of Roosevelt County. Clearly, the tribes are sound like they're taking this seriously. In fact, after our coverage last week, heard locally on KVCK Radio in Wolf Point and Poplar, you got contacted by tribal leaders saying, hey, we want to work with you. Apparently, you really got folks fired up on the Fort Peck Reservation.
And that's exactly what I do these for. I do these interviews with you, with different agencies, different interviews, because I want the word to get out that this is not something to be trifled with. You know, TDA really is, you know, the potential of being a terrorist organization if they are designated, especially because of the potential. I look at them, you know, they're not conducting terrorist attacks like your Middle Eastern groups, your Middle Eastern extremist groups right now. But they have the potential because they have such a network back to Venezuela with a President Maduro and the Venezuelan government. They have the potential. They've conducted terrorist attacks in other countries, in Chile, where they found an individual who was in opposition to the Maduro government, and they found him, kidnapped him, tortured him, and then dismembered him. And it was a clear act of terrorism because you want to expose fear from President Maduro. So he is utilizing the TDA network. He's helping fund them. So it is a clear individual. And his ultimate purpose, you know, President Maduro, is to sow, you know, problems and social unrest in all these different countries, whether it be Chile, Peru. We are the current patient right now with this disease. Chile, Peru, Colombia, they've been involved in this fight against TDA for years. This has just become a new virus for the United States. And utilizing law enforcement, not just ICE, but FBI, Homeland Security, the tribal law enforcement agencies, everybody has to work together to investigate because they've learned from other criminal organizations how to get by, how to, you know, how to skirt the system, or how to beat, how to make something even better. They're, like I said, what I said before is they're MS-13 2.0. They're stronger, they're faster, they're better than MS-13. MS-13 is a street gang. This is not a street gang. This is definitely a criminal organization that's dangerous.
Well, and the other very important question that Dan Bruner raised after we talked about, you know, the arrests in Belgrade and Bozeman and the arrests in Wolf Point in particular was, okay, I'm glad they arrested, you know, these handful of people in both locations here, but what do we not know? There's obviously the infrastructure in place for much larger operations than just these handfuls of individuals. So it's what we don't know that truly concerns him. Hold that thought. We're going to start with your phone calls right after this because, I've gotten to catch up with Dan Bruner a few times. This is your chance to get to interact with him. 406-294-0970. We've got Nancy up first and then Logan in Roundup as well. And some phone lines open for you. Plus, you can message us on the Montana Talks app. The number 294-0970.
Talking about the issues that matter to Montana statewide. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
It's 82 degrees above zero in Caracas, Venezuela today. The feels-like temperature in Wolf Point, Daniel in Wolf Point just sent me a message. The feels-like temperature in Wolf Point this morning, 54 below zero. So for you TDA operatives feeling the heat in Wolf Point, you might want to escape the cold and go back to Caracas, Venezuela. Just a thought. Just a thought. Let's go to Nancy in Roundup. I tell you, Nancy's been on this border situation since day one, sounding the alarms. Nancy, do you have a quick question or comment for Mr. Bruner here? Is Nancy there? She's on line three, right, Caden? Did we lose Nancy? Okay, all right. I'm not hearing anything there. Let's go to Logan in Roundup. Logan, thanks for the call. Did you have a quick question or comment? I had a buddy in Afghanistan. He'd always say, "Oh, orale way." Hey, you're coming in. Your audio's. Hold on a sec. Your audio's coming in very faint. It's almost like you're on a distant speakerphone or something. Can you use your handset instead? Can you switch over to your handset for us, there, Logan?
Is that any better?
That's way better. Yeah, go ahead. All right, go ahead with your question or comment for Mr. Bruner.
Okay, Mr. Bruner, I've got a question for you. I'm wondering if you are able to tell us what kind of firepower are these Vatos, when they're arrested, what kind of firepower are we talking about that they're dealing with? Are we talking handguns, AR-15s? Do they have, you know, ceramic body armor? I'm a natural worrier at heart, and I just kind of want to know if I ever run into these guys what I'm up against. Can you possibly share any of that information?
That's a very good question, yeah, because we've heard how much more dangerous the drug cartel operatives have gotten along our southern border, increased firepower, drones, things like that. Yeah, Dan Bruner, your thoughts?
No, that's a great question, and without a doubt, these guys are definitely well-armed, as everybody could have seen from the videos that came out of Aurora. They've got long guns. They've got handguns. They're well capable, but they're armed just like any other really, elite criminal organization in this country. We know that the Mexican cartel have complete vast amounts of armory, and they have very close relationship with two cartels, CJNG and the Sinaloa cartel. So the fact that they could probably get heavy armament from them is not beyond the stretch of imagination. But I think that the general, you know, TDA members, handguns is probably most likely. But one of the things I applaud your ability to, you know, defend yourself and protect yourself, but understand this, the Venezuelan community is, a great community in and of themselves. A very small percentage, I would say 10% maybe, are criminal organizations. Not every Venezuelan is a TDA member. But if they're here illegally in this country, no matter if they're a TDA member or a Venezuelan, they've committed a federal violation. They're here illegally. But those TDA members that do have the guns, They do have the weapons, and what's dangerous about them is they are going to defend themselves. They will defend themselves. We have known that they are not very friendly to law enforcement. They don't go willingly. They are not cooperative after or post-arrest. When FBI or immigration go to arrest one member, it's typically 10 FBI agents. That's why a lot of people have just said, why do so many people go, FBI agent, go to arrest one person? It's because we do overwhelming force so that that individual doesn't respond with a fire, shootout. But these TDA members are extremely, extremely dangerous, and I believe, yes, they have the capability and the capacity to get a lot of firearms. So great question.
Well, and if you see something, say something, how do you say something? That's why I like the fact that ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, they have this tip line, phone number. They also have a website where you can go. If you suspect illegal activity, whether it's illegal aliens or something like this, to me, that's a good option. I like that they're doing that because, look, we don't know. It was kind of like when I first talked with you. I said, just like the point you made there, which is there are incredible Venezuelan Americans that are here legally. I mean, go to Miami and you'll meet some incredible Venezuelan Americans that escaped the socialism and of what Venezuela became. Venezuela used to be like the crown of the continent. We talk about Glacier National Park being the crown of the continent here in America. Venezuela was a crown. It was one of the wealthiest countries in the world. And then socialism destroyed it. And now you see stuff like this coming out of Venezuela. And so, but there are incredible Venezuelan Americans that escaped that tyranny and of course live legally here in America right now. But I remember one of the first questions I asked you was, as I was traveling the state last year doing events all across the state, I remember running into a lot of Venezuelan kind of like food delivery drivers. And you actually said that that's actually something to watch out for because they could be casing out your house for a potential home burglary, which is what Tren de Aragua specializes in.
Absolutely. So there's something called the South American Theft Group, which has been a scourge on this country for about 5 to 6 years. It is a group of Chilean organized crime, literally almost like a mob family that is down in Chile, and they've been sending Chileans up to this country to conduct robberies, jewelry stores, a bank, and then they're going back. They're utilizing a loophole in the visa system with Chile. Well, the Tren de Aragua, which I told you about, has learned from other criminal organizations. So they're utilizing that tactic too. And they're not just doing a home invasion traditionally where somebody smashes the door down. They're conducting logical intelligence. So they're utilizing Zillow to look to see if the home has photographs. So I always advise all my clients, take your homes off of Zillow. Don't leave, because they'll look at the rooms, they're going to figure out where the master bedroom is, and then they're going to smash the door, and then they're going to want to be in and out in a few minutes. Another way of getting intelligence is the food delivery drivers. I would always advise you, if you do food delivery, have them just leave it at the door. Don't answer the door. There's always that little check mark, leave at door. Have them leave at the door, because if you open the door, they get to see who the age of the people are, if there are children, if it's elderly. They're looking to see if there are cameras, are there dogs. So if somebody ever comes to my door and rings the doorbell, I have two large German shepherds that live in my house, and I've trained them. And I let them bark. I let them bark if somebody comes to our door, so I want them to know, okay, there are two large dogs behind that door. Make yourself more difficult. If you're using the food delivery app, make sure you just say, leave it at the door. That way they can't get to look inside it. And when they're at the door. Also put cameras at the front door. They're going to look for that. So all these little different things that they're utilizing to get intelligence, so when they can get into the house, they can do the robbery and get out of the house in 5 minutes, get in, get out as quickly as possible.
So when I shared the photographs of these, and thanks to the Northern Plains Independent, by the way, they had the booking photos and they gave us permission to share these photographs of the three alleged drug suspects in Wolf Point. Two of the guys had tattoos all over their face. One guy, he was like the Harvey Two-Face of the cartels, the Harvey Two-Face of TDA. He had half of his face tattooed, the other half not tattooed, except for maybe a couple teardrops or something. Now, I like tattoos. I think they're cool. I don't have any, but I think tattoos are cool. But, you know, so you would think, okay, if somebody's got their face covered in tattoos, they're okay, maybe something to watch out for. But I've also been to MMA fights and fusion fights, and you see guys with cool tattoos even on their face, and they're not bad guys. Sometimes they've had a bad past and they got over it. But that being said, what should people in, say, Wolf Point or on the Fort Peck Reservation or elsewhere, what should they look for? Because some of what our listeners have told me is these guys are hiding out in government housing areas. So how do we know where to find them, how to find them, and what to look for?
Well, that's the thing. It's very difficult these days because, again, the gang learns from the mistakes from the past. So previously, and back in 2015 in the past, MS-13 used to have tattoos that were very vibrant, very colorful, and extremely overt. So you'd have the M and the S. If they committed a homicide on behalf of MS-13, they'd get their MS. Second homicide, they'd get the 13. If you had those, that meant, okay. But also what that denoted is other gang members would see them and go, okay, he's conducted a homicide. But what that also did was law enforcement was able to easily identify them. Okay, this clearly is a gang member. So it's very difficult these days to find overt gang signs that you can look at. So TDA is known for, one of the things is a locomotive train. You find, because tren in Spanish is train. So you find a locomotive train tattooed on an individual, that doesn't mean anything to us, to the layman, to the civilians. But in their community, they'll understand what that means. But it's difficult to look at somebody who's got a tattoo of a train because they could be just a train enthusiast. So that's what
they could work for the railroad on the High Line, right? Yeah.
They could be working for Amtrak, exactly. Yeah. So it's very difficult these days to overtly identify somebody who is a gang member. But most important part is saying, listen, there's law enforcement are trained in these areas, in Wolf's Point, in Bozeman, in Belgrade, everywhere. They're trained for this. If you see something, give them a call. That's why they get paid for it. Pass on the intelligence. Even if it's nothing, at least they're getting information going, okay, so maybe this is something. It may turn out to be nothing, but that's their job, is to collect all the intelligence, provide information to law enforcement. That's what they're there for.
All right, great. Let's sneak in another quick phone call here. We've got about a minute before the break. Dan in Vida just called in. Dan, did you have a quick question or comment? Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, you know, these guys that were arrested up here in Wolf Point on East Dawson, they were in tribal housing house, and they were just almost next door to my son-in-law's mother's house. I mean, right in the neighborhood where we have people, you know? And I want to know, you know, I guess my question is rhetorical to you guys, but what's going to be done with these folks that are harboring and aiding and abetting these folks?
That's a good question. Who is harboring them and aiding and abetting them?
And what's going to be done about it?
And who's protecting them? And it also raises a broader question about just kind of government housing in general, doesn't it too, Dan, in a way, right? Great question. All right, hold that thought. If you have a follow-up, Dan, I'll keep you on hold. Or if that was the main question you had, you can roll on. We'll hit the hard break, and then we'll get the response back from Dan Bruner with the Bruner Sierra Group right after this.
This is where Montana talks ag with Lane Nordlund.
Higher egg prices and lower supplies. No shock to consumers, but that was highlighted in the latest World Egg Supply and Demand Estimates report. World Egg Outlook Board Chair Mark Chekanowski.
The daily New York shell egg price, which is an official USDA egg price collected in New York, recently passed $8 per dozen, highest on record. Basically, what's driving these recent spikes in egg prices is that we've lost a lot of birds last year at HPAI, and those losses continue this year, down about nearly 20 million birds in January alone of this year. So when you remove that many birds from a flock of just over 300 million birds, that tightens up supplies and prices respond accordingly.
Now, staying on the bird flu topic, it was announced that the Trump administration is preparing to make a move away from depopulating entire flocks infected with bird flu. The focus will now be on biosecurity and medication to contain these outbreaks. The Trump administration's USDA has granted Zoetis conditional approval for its bird flu vaccine in poultry, citing safety and expected efficacy. Conditional licenses are issued during times of emergencies or for special circumstances. USDA is also rebuilding a stockpile of bird flu vaccines, while Moderna is developing a human vaccine with government funding. I'm Lane Nordlund.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, great phone call there from Dan and Vida. Raises a lot of questions, which is, okay, who is providing protection for these? You know, first we talked about the Mexican drug cartels targeting reservations in Montana in particular. And, of course, DEA, former head of the DEA, Stacey Zinn, joined us on the show, and we talked about the Spear Siding case where, you know, the cartel operatives would target members of the tribe, then they would embed themselves with the members and the families, and then they would start to target their own communities with fentanyl and meth and more. And I'm assuming kind of a similar modus operandi here with the Trende Aragua gang members as well. Dan Bruner, your thoughts?
I agree absolutely with DEA's perspective and analysis that the criminal organization, no matter what it is, they're going to always find a weak spot. They're going to find a weakness where they can embed themselves. Clearly, the reservations is a different topic, a different area of, you know, where they found vulnerabilities for law enforcement and federal law enforcement to conduct long-term investigations, and they've been able to embed themselves. I definitely am not going to say that. I don't have very little, if no, expertise or understanding of how the reservation, the relationships work with local and federal law enforcement. So I wouldn't want to comment on that without learning some more, but the important thing is they're going to find the weaknesses. I've seen them here in Bozeman, downtown Bozeman. I've seen them driving around town. I'm able to recognize a lot of these individuals. I'm not going to say how I'm able to because I don't want to, jeopardize any ongoing law enforcement investigations. But I've been able to recognize just their vehicles, driving around town. So they're sometimes just in plain sight, and just hiding amongst the community themselves. So that's what makes it dangerous, and they prey on certain locations where they can work with college students. And I know that I've talked to local, people employing in bars and restaurants here in town, and they're utilizing themselves to try and push out that element from their bars because they're finding the weaknesses, they're finding the weak spots to exploit that. And obviously, the reservations has been. But, from what I understand is the DEA, especially up from the reservations up there near Wolf's Point, I've spoken, they were on that call with me with the tribal police, and they're doing everything they can to root out this evil.
Yeah, and you mentioned Bozeman. I mean, we've seen a lot of illegal aliens in the jail, or at least they're on an immigration retainer, on an ICE hold. And so oftentimes we may not know whether, what immigration status they're in there on, but as local law enforcement says, it's most often because they're illegal aliens. But we've seen everything from, they get in a car wreck, they wreck into somebody, and they don't have insurance. And so now somebody's, just lost a bunch of money and potentially their car insurance because some illegal alien smacked into them. There was one November where you had two different illegal aliens in the course of 2 weeks, driving drunk the wrong way on the interstate near Bozeman. You've had illegal aliens, more than once now, arrested on rape charges, targeting women in the downtown bars in Bozeman. And so it's really hitting the entire state. Inside baseball here, so you were kind of an FBI Hispanic gang expert during your career with the FBI, but you were also a special agent. During my years in the military, I got to work with incredible FBI agents, the guys doing the forensic evidence work over in Afghanistan, and
And then also I worked very closely with the special agent Bomtex, doing some forensic evidence work with the military myself, and just absolutely incredible guys. They were special agents doing the normal job of an FBI special agent, but then on top of that, they had their Bomtex duties as well. And so it sounds like you were kind of similar in that regard, where this was your specialty.
Correct. Yeah. So everybody who comes into the FBI as a special agent, they get that. That's what they do. They're investigating federal violations, utilizing the, you know, upholding the Constitution of the United States and the laws set forth by Congress. And that's their job, is to enforce federal law. There are tons of secondary jobs. So I was part of the SWAT team in Newark. So, and that was a secondary job. So whenever a SWAT call out would be at 5 a.m, I would go do that. And as soon as the SWAT job was done, I would get back to my desk and continue working cases. So I was also the crisis management coordinator. So something, a large, you know, traumatic event, a terrorist attack, late in New York City, there were a couple of terrorist attacks post 9/11. We'd fire up the command post in Newark, in FBI Newark, and I would be, as a crisis management coordinator, I'd be in charge of the command post, making sure that everyone, the evidence response team, the bomb tech, the SWAT team, everybody was being utilized correctly and all the information was being funneled effectively and, you know, correctly. That's why, you know, I do what I do now, is providing security consulting for families here, high net worth value families, businesses here in Bozeman, where I tell them, hey, listen, this is how you prepare yourself. This is how you protect yourself. These are the things. You may know how to do your business, whether it be running a sushi restaurant or running a family office worth, you know, $50 million or something like that. My job is to security, and I will tell you how to best protect yourself. And these are sorts of things that every FBI agent has, is multiple collateral duties and utilizing all their tools and all their skills to set forth and, like I said, support the Constitution of the United States.
Well, I'm glad you're freeing up some time for some low net worth people like me today, too. It's great to have you on the show. No, I say all that inside baseball because, you know, I was overseas in Africa one time, and I remember we got to meet with a legat, the legal attaché at one of the embassies, and he's like, oh, yeah, I lived in Montana for a few years. I think he worked for the FBI office in Shelby, Montana. Because of the reservations and because of the jurisdictional issues, FBI actually has a pretty significant presence in Montana, maybe could have more. And so that being said, at least we've got that special agent capability on the ground in various parts of the state to help tackle this issue.
Agreed. But here's the thing, is it's a constantly evolving, a constantly growing problem, whether it be crime. So Montana, you know, traditionally has not been a hotbed of Hispanic organized crime, whether it be TBA, cartels, or anything. So the people and the FBI agents that are here are trained in how to conduct any federal violation. But I was assigned to a gang unit in Newark, New Jersey. So I had plenty of you know, faces around me. But here in Montana, you may not have the agents who know how to utilize RICO, racketeering investigations, how to conduct RICO investigations. But more importantly, having an agent who speaks Spanish and is able to communicate and listen to phone taps, listen to wire calls, read text messages, and understand the community and really get into, you know, cultivating sources, getting them to work for the agent, that is the key to any FBI investigation, is finding a source. It doesn't have to be someone from the criminal organization. It's someone from the community that may be able to hear things. Maybe finding a waitress at a certain restaurant who can say and provide names, provide photographs. These are individuals. That's intelligence that's important to FBI investigations. So getting those types of people, I really want to start working, whether it be with the state of Montana and getting more people up here, or in another capacity, is getting agents up here who understand Hispanic crime, understand organized crime, and are able to work RICO cases and getting them up here. That's the first key. It took me probably a good year and a half to 2 years of working MS-13 before I was able to say, okay, I understand MS-13 now, and be able to sit across from an MS-13 member or MS-13 leader and speak to him from a position of power. And that's going to be the change. That's the difference, being a position of power, because you are knowledgeable. You know almost more than they do, and it's almost pretending to know more than they do. But if they think that you know more than they do, that's how they're going to break. They're going to be like, all right, you know a lot about it. Let me tell you about what. And getting confession, getting them to flip, and getting them to testify. I've done that countless times. Getting them to flip and testify for the government, and that'll break an organization in half. And that's the key of how we're going to defeat TDA.
Yeah. Hey, folks, if you have a question or a comment, you can message us on the app, the Montana Talks app, or call in right now. We'll try to sneak you on. But I know a lot of people are just kicking back, just like, wow, fascinated listening to our guest here, Dan Bruner, former FBI Hispanic gang expert. He's got the Bruner Sierra Group. He lives in Bozeman, Montana. Yeah, on that point about see something, say something, that's why I like this ICE tip sheet. Is because, like, for example, I remember somebody telling me, hey, so-and-so just sold a vehicle online to somebody in Bozeman, and they bought it with straight-up cash, and apparently they're from Venezuela. Now, it could be a good person from Venezuela that escaped socialism and brought their wealth here to America, or it could be, you know, a criminal using cash to buy a vehicle. We don't know, but that's why see something, say something, and then they can investigate.
Absolutely. Like I said, what I said earlier was law enforcement, they're the ones that are trained, not just ICE. You've got local PD, you got state police, you got the troopers here, and then obviously FBI, Homeland Security. They're all capable investigators, whether they're trained in how to do RICO or, like I said, speak Spanish. That doesn't matter. If you get information, contact your local police. If you know a police officer from down the street, if you know that one of the sheriff's department, hey, listen, provide them the information. Say, listen, I saw this. Here's the license plate. It may be nothing. But here's the information, and then that'll get passed up, and that'll get disseminated to the agency, and then they'll find out whether they run that plate, and then that plate may hit off of an FBI investigation, and then that officer will contact the FBI in Bozeman or Billings at the RA, which is a resident agency, which is...
And maybe talking with counterparts down in South America at the embassy here or there. Yeah, you just never know what that could trigger. All right, hold that thought. Quick break. We got a great caller on the phone lines right after this. Hey, if...
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, Kat in Sydney just messaged us on the Montana Talks app and says, I am fascinated. Based off everything that we're hearing here from our guest this morning. And then Bruce in Ennis says, how are these gangs getting driver's licenses to drive in Montana? That was a question from Bruce. I don't think they're getting driver's licenses because some of them that are showing up in the jail in Bozeman, for example, one of the charges is driving without a license. But maybe I'm wrong on that one. Although it is interesting, in the Montana legislature, the Democrats have a bill that would allow for a ID card for anybody, not just, citizens, but illegals as well. That's pretty interesting. Of course, Republicans are trying to stop that. Let's go to Fred in the Flathead. Fred, did you have a quick question or comment? And thanks for the call.
Hey, good morning, guys. Thanks for the information. Just real quick, we came from a state, starts with a C, lots of gangs. My son works at a large city, has lots of gangs. Once these gangs are established in an area, they become a permanent fixture to that area. They're hard to root out, as I'm sure the guest will tell you. To root them out causes us to go beyond what civil rights are allowed. So I hope our elected officials are doing everything they can to make Montana the hardest place ever for them to establish. Once they're here, they take over and it becomes part of the permanent landscape. End of comment.
Such a great point. Fred, yeah, thanks for the call, and thanks for your service fighting fires and much more. Great to hear from you. And such a great point. Dan Bruner, that kind of ties in. I know one of the reasons why you're graciously joining us on the show here, and one of the reasons why I keep talking about this topic is it's just like you said, when you first heard that Tren de Aragua now appears to be operational in northeast Montana on the Fort Peck Reservation, you know, you made the point that, look, once the spotlight was on Aurora, these are my words, not yours, the cockroaches started scurrying. You were just surprised that they scurried that far north. And so the point being is that let's put the spotlight on this and the efforts to combat it here in Montana, and hopefully they will scurry somewhere else, right?
Agreed, 100%. And the reason why I said I was surprised about Wolf's Point is because I'm not familiar with all the other different communities where there's Hispanic communities. You know, I wasn't aware that there's a large Hispanic community just over the border in the Dakotas. And when I was speaking with the tribal officials, they were telling me this. So I learned a lot. So there's a lot yet which I have yet to learn. But I know about the movements. What I advise everybody is, if there is a Venezuelan community, odds are most likely that there is going to be someone from the TDA there. They're going to be embedded there. They're going to be embedded in that Venezuelan community. They're going to be with their own people. You're not going to find MS-13 inside Venezuelan communities. You're going to find MS-13 in El Salvadorian communities. So those are the things is to look for the signs, and that's starting there. Bozeman has got a TDA presence because they're Venezuelan, Hondurans, and Mexicans. That is the community here. They've come here for the construction. They came up here. The TDA follows that. They embed themselves within the people of their own community so that they can, number one, hide, and two, begin their criminal activity, because they exploit those that are in their own community first.
That's such a great point. Can I just highlight that? I apologize to interrupt, but I want to make that point, because I hear some of these people commenting on social media in defense of the illegal aliens or the cartels or anything. They're like, oh, you guys are just racist. It's like, the reason why Hispanics voted in such big numbers for Donald J. Trump is because, who do you think these criminal illegal aliens are targeting? They're embedding themselves in immigrant communities. So people who came here legally are being targeted and facing, you know, the repercussions of the criminals that are now coming here illegally because of what have been our open borders. And so the very minority communities are the ones being harmed the most by this criminality. And that's a point that needs to be underscored. So when these people try to lecture us or call us racist, oh, BS, you're the ones who are, you know, causing all this harm to these minority communities.
Absolutely. Agreed. 100%. That these people want this criminal element, this 10% out of their communities, because not only is it harming the Hispanic word, you know, people are assuming that every Hispanic is a criminal. That's a problem. That, you know, I'm Hispanic myself. I don't appear to be, but I am, you know, my family's from Chile and Argentina. So I'm a first generation American. My parents were immigrants here to this country. Now, the fact that they want these elements out of their community because they're trying to earn a living, they're trying to earn pay, but they're also victims themselves. They're also the victims because those criminal elements are extorting them, saying, hey, give me $20 a week and I won't cause you harm or damage here in the United States. But also, they're a threat to their families back in Venezuela or back in Honduras by saying, hey, if you don't give me money, your family, your mom, your dad will get a visit from a TDA member back in Venezuela. So these people, these are victims. They want to get rid of this.
Yeah. Well, and I know we got less than a minute to go here, but which is why this is so important. And so the point being here is that, Dan, you mentioned the tribes have been reaching out to you. Others in law enforcement have been reaching out. If there are any officials, folks in law enforcement that want to meet with you, that want to talk with you, I know you're open to it. How can people get a hold of you if they want to have you come speak at an event or whatever?
I appreciate it. Listen, my website is thebrunersierragroup.com, and all my contact information is on there. But I have a Substack, so I put out a newsletter once a week, and I just posted one today about talking about a new Brazilian gang that is making their way through the United States as we speak, and they're becoming a big, big problem here in the United States, is this new Brazilian gang. They're actually not new, but they're new to the United States. Extremely dangerous. So, and that's on BrunerSierraGroup.substack.com.
All right, and that's Bruner, and that's Bruner with two N's. Yeah, and that's Bruner with two N's as well.
Correct.
All right. Hey, thanks so much for your time. Greatly appreciated. Dan Bruner, always a pleasure. Thanks for your expertise and more.